Hello and welcome to the Catbird Speaks, the podcast for the Catbird Seat blog, the White Sox affiliate for the ESPN Sweet Spot Network. I am Matt Adams, and joining me today, somebody who most definitely has a lifetime pass to the RV Hall of Fame, James Fegan.
Never been.
It's right in your backyard, man.
Yeah, I'm the exit on the toll road before it, though. There are two Elkhart toll road exits. A lot of towns don't have that kind of honor.
I would hate Elkhart to go does. One extra exit.
I'm the one before it.
And with less exciting...
Did you not want me to go on about the RV Hall of Fame?
No,
okay, cut me off, right? Whatever.
Cutting that off. What do you have to add, James, about the RV Hall of Fame?
Looks like a big tin hunk of crap on the road.
I spent about three exits as I passed it on the highway actually marveling that that was a thing. Because it's a thing.
It's actually
anyways.
RV / motorhome Hall of Fame.
Is that what it says on your pass?
RVMH.
In Austin, Texas, Colin Whitchurch.
It's 103 degrees here. Matt, how hot is it where you are?
It was like 110 today.
Jesus, I hate it. I want to die.
Good! Good.
We get the dry, though. So you get the nuts, crazy humidity with it. I don't get that.
Yeah, I'm moving on Saturday too, and it's probably going to be the worst day of my life.
Where are you moving to?
Another part of town.
Oh. So we're still going to get the crappy, like, oh, it's 60 in December here.
Oh hell yeah! I can't wait.
Yeah. 60 inches of snow in Elkhart.
Right now.
Yes. Next couple hours, it's all fallen. Everyone's raiding the Culvers. It's their last chance.
So, what do you guys think about the White Sox?
I've settled on the idea that they're bad, but not to an insulting degree, I guess. I'm not the one who paid $120 million to field the roster. Maybe Rick Reinsdorf finds them kind of insultingly bad.
I was a little insulted that they did us the disservice of stringing a few wins together and leading us to believe that maybe they could Kansas City Royals their way into the playoffs, and then remembering that they're actually bad and going back to the regular thing.
Yeah, god damn it, that pissed me off so much, too. I was even tweeting it while it was happening during that Red Sox series. I'm like, here they go, they're pulling us back in, and then you started seeing all these tweets and articles about, I think when they got to 48 and 50, everyone was saying, the Royals were 48 and 50 after 98 games last year, and they were the same amount of games out of a playoff spot or whatever with the same amount of teams in front of them as the White Sox have. And, yeah, I mean, anyone could have seen this coming, them just giving us one last faint hope for glory and then crushing our souls.
In our heart of hearts, we all knew they weren't going to actually do it. It was nice to have that little bit of hope, and we wanted it so bad that we gripped it for as long as we could, which was 3 days. But it wasn't going to happen.
The Royals last year, they're good this year. Well, I mean, they're going to run away with the Central, even though they're kind of struggling the past week or two. Everyone acknowledged that what the Royals did last year was total bullshit. And not something like we should base on like happening again. Not like bullshit, like they didn't deserve to be there. I mean, they won the games, whatever. But like a total crazy-ass anomaly that we shouldn't base future precedent on. And it only took like 8 months to just like roll over and forget that. Like, you know, mediocre teams with awful run differentials that look like shit and have 500 records, they're totally going to go on like 40 and 10 streaks to finish the year. That's money in the bank. That's a verified trend. Like, no, you know?
Yeah, but that's what's going to happen now every year. I saw that shit and I just knew we're going to see that every year. There's going to be some fringe contender at 48 and 50. I just think it's absurd. I mean, like, as I wrote, you know, I'm not one of the teams, one of the people that's going to bash them for not selling or not buying. But it is very strange to sit here and see that at least one very clear seller is in front of them in Detroit, and two other, like, I don't know. They made some moves at the deadlines in, like, Tampa and Texas. They're all in front of the White Sox.
Tampa sold a reliever. Like,
yeah, but they also bought Cole Hamels.
No, Tampa.
Oh, Tampa, yeah.
Tampa carved out, like, sent Kevin Jepsen off somewhere. I mean, it's just Kevin Jepsen. But usually you don't, like, sell off members of your late inning relief corps when you're trying to win.
Yeah, but they didn't, like, outwardly, blatantly sell. You know, they didn't, like, Milwaukee or Philadelphia the thing. They traded one reliever who isn't even their closer or isn't even their best reliever. So I wouldn't, like, put them as outright sellers.
Yeah, but if the White Sox are trying to win at right now, and they, like, their one deadline move is, like, trading Jake Petrichka for a double-A arm, you'd be like, well, that's probably not the best move.
Yeah, that's true. Good point.
Like, this isn't Trader Kenny days anymore. What was I going to rant about before?
Was it related to the Royals?
Possibly. Oh, my point is, in the White Sox defense, how the hell do you lose to the Boston Red Sox these days? They looked god-awful. I just feel like the way Cleveland and Boston are playing that week, really anyone would have rolled over them.
Yeah, they had a game against the Yankees. I think it was the first game after the White Sox series earlier this week where it was like 3-3 in the seventh inning, and it ended up being like 13-4 Yankees or something ridiculous like that. They called up, you know, they're starting to call up some of their prospects, so they're clearly just completely mailing it in at this point.
Pablo Sandoval struck out on a ball that, like, hit him as flush as you can get hit by a ball.
That was one of the funniest things I've ever seen. It was against Sale, right?
Yeah, that was the game they won.
The one game and Boston won. Yeah, it hit him in the chest, and he swung at it, essentially.
Like, his strikeout was immediately followed by his cry of pain.
Hit him in the wrist, didn't it?
Forearm.
Okay. I think it ricocheted into his chest after that. Then.
It did look very awful, though. And, like, if he didn't look like he was hurt so much, it would have been a lot funnier.
I mean, just the fact that he wasn't, like, nailed in the head, I got off a couple chuckles. It was pretty good. I really thought he was going on the DL for, like, the rest of the year. I still kind of chuckle at it. So, the White Sox are done?
Finished.
So, are they going to... I feel like, as much as we've acknowledged it, there might be still some stagger before they start managing the team like that. Like, maybe not even until the end of this month. Like, I don't think... Like, first of all, Robin managed 2013 like they were in it the whole time. So I don't know what he's going to do differently. But I'm wondering how it's going to play into the roles of some of their kind of greener guys on the team. Someone like Carlos Rodon right now has been awful for basically the last five starts. But as far as the future, especially 2016, Carlos Rodon is someone you want to be an above-average contributor for that rotation.
Right, and you want him to go through with some very specific tasks at this point, too, much like they do when people are out on the mound in the minor leagues working on something. But I think we saw that the other day, or was it even yesterday, that he didn't do what he was told, basically, and Robin was like, well, forget it.
Yeah, they're taking some sort of weird hard tack, which I guess it's definitely deserved in terms of performance. I can't fault that. And, you know, it's probably for the best if he's going to be this erratic, not just, like, continually give him the rope to hang himself. But I'm trying to figure out what they actually want him to do. I mean, obviously he needs to throw strikes.
Yeah, I think it's fair that in games that don't matter for a guy who has trouble hitting the zone, just say, go out there and hit the damn zone and at least want to see him making an effort towards that. But it was clear that he wasn't even trying to do that. He was trying to get slick with pretty much every pitch still.
Yeah, but how much longer are they even going to have him out there? Like, would you guys be surprised if he's just shut down for the entire month of September just to keep his innings limit low if the games don't matter?
I'd be surprised by a total shutdown, yeah.
Yeah.
I would not be surprised by a break in the rotation. I would not be surprised by Eric Johnson sliding in. Surely at some point, because I don't know what the hell he's doing. And without Samardzija getting traded, I really don't know when, like, the natural entry point is for him.
If he doesn't get called up soon, your daily tens are going to become really restless.
Yeah, and repetitive. Kyle Schwarber just hit, like, a 500-foot home run
That barely cleared the wall.
It was really high when it peaked, so I feel still justified in what I said. So he's making me feel bad, but I would be surprised by Rodon just like making a start every 5 days for the rest of the year. I mean, his career high in college is around 130 innings combined with AAA and majors right now. I think he's in 90 to 100 range. And if he just started for the next 2 months, he'd clear his college totals, which, I mean, he finished like 150, 160, big deal, but I feel like that'd be reason enough for them to pull the reins. If he's going to be awful, you know, I'm not really going to sweat
it. Right, you won't miss that time.
Like, at some point, he's just banging his head against the wall.
They know he's going to pitch next year, so, I mean, it's not like you said with Johnson, you want to maybe see what he can do against major league hitters, and I don't know, you can bring Montas up and give him a look as well in the same vein, so.
I really don't see him being ready to start in a rotation next year.
Yeah, I think we'll definitely see him in the bullpen before this year's out, probably in September, though.
Yeah, I mean, might as well just, like, call him up to give him something to do when the AAA season ends, but it doesn't seem like he's not an overwhelming presence in AA, you know, multiple times through the order, so I don't know why I would submit him to that.
They're going to have to make room for Brad Penny in September, too, obviously.
Yeah, Brad Penny is, his numbers are really terrible.
I bought, they had a deal at the end of July, or sometime in July, for those $20 to buy MILB TV for the rest of the season. So I did that, and I was looking through the games the other day to find a game with some interesting prospects to watch, and one of the pitching matchups for Charlotte, Indianapolis was Brad Penny versus Chris Volstead. And I'm like, wow, AAA baseball can be pretty terrible sometimes.
Brad Penny's made like $100 million in baseball. The White Sox aren't going to the playoffs. They probably don't need a veteran spot starter really anytime soon. He's just playing for the Charlotte Knights all year.
He just likes to play baseball, and that's the one team that's letting him play, maybe.
I guess, but doesn't, like, everything freaking hurt at this age? He's a huge, like, late 30s dude. He's thrown a ton of innings.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean,
he needs a routine, or he's going to go freaking crazy at home.
Or he'll gain 200 pounds.
I guess. I mean, he could just...
I don't know how much more pounds that frame's going to handle.
Just walk around the town all day. So do we want to, I mean, I guess we're going to assume that Ron keeps getting play in the rotation intermittently, but I really would like to see him trend up. I would like him not to be continually regressing into the end of 2015. That would cheer me up.
Yeah, it'd be cool if he gave us something good some good memories to go into 2016 with instead of going into 2016 thinking, boy, I sure hope Rodon isn't as terrible as he was last year.
Because basically we've seen kind of the same guy all year long, which is someone who has a slider that is definitely unhittable, but is here and there as far as having even like the remote trace of fastball command necessary to make major leaguers and I think the big adjustment for him is he's coming out of college where no one could lay off a slider ever and make contact with it, and now he's got to come to this league where he has to throw strikes to survive, and I think it's going to be a process. So I don't know how, I mean, they're obviously mad at him for whatever reason, but I don't know how much it works to be punitive as much as, like, that's just going to be part of the process with him. But there's also other youngsters who are playing roles right now, so I guess who do we want to keep seeing play in the White Sox lineup regularly, and what do we expect from them? Comes to mind right now is Tyler Saladino is hitting kind of poorly and continually being batted at number second. Which is weird.
There's nobody else really, I think, to give any burn there at all to stop him from playing. I mean, I don't think he's going to be much more than what we're looking at, but, I mean, what are you trying to get? I mean, Beckham, you know what Beckham is. You know, we've done the Bonifacio thing, and he's still DL'd anyways, so.
Yeah, I mean, I don't see anything wrong with letting him play out the rest of the year at third base and, you know, get experience, see if the organization thinks he has any staying power there. Like Matt said, I'm sure he's probably not more than a utility infielder, like long term on a good team, but, you know, you're not calling Matt Davidson up. You know, so who else is going to play third base every day? And what the hell is the point of having Bonifacio there or Leury Garcia there?
Saladino is unfortunately the other option if they don't pick up Alexei Ramirez's 2016 option.
I don't see how they don't do that at this point.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's the only alternative I can think of short of going out and getting a shortstop, which isn't something you can do.
Or just watching the hell out of Tim Anderson, which they're
hoping. No! Oh,
wow. Yeah.
No, I know. That's what I'm saying.
Don't speak it.
I'm saying no, but this organization, man, come on. Would you be shocked if they did something that stupid?
I'd be appalled. Just like half the way to shock.
All right.
I was speaking to Mal Rubio. Kind of frequently, but he was saying Tim Anderson might be the type of guy who figures it out when he's like 26 years old.
Keith Law threw a Sean Dunstan comp at him in his top 50 write-up, which I thought was kind of interesting.
My primary memories of Sean Dunstan are Harry Carey saying his name wrong and the Mets sticking him out in center field to die.
And the dude never walked. Never.
He sure could throw, though.
Yeah. I mean, he was a 1-1 pick, right?
He was something crazy high.
He was drafted 1-1, I think, in like 84 or whatever.
I definitely remember reading a Sun-Times column that talked about his Hall of Fame eligibility for some reason.
Yeah, first overall in the 82 draft.
82, okay.
Jeez, 82.
And he debuted at 22 years old a couple years later.
Where does the time go? Yeah.
You remember that, James?
82? Like the other day.
So Rubio was calling Anderson someone who might figure it out at 26.
Yeah, like that's someone who just should not be rushed in any way, shape, or form. Should, like, progress through as slow as possible, and then when he gets up, still expect, like, him to be, like, swimming up a creek or swimming upstream for a year or two or three.
Yeah, we hope he spends the entire 2016 season in Birmingham still, too, right?
Yes, that would be ideal. That's too much to hope for. I hope he starts in Birmingham in 2016. He's doing too good right now, and if that continues, he's just not going to get to just, like, wail on Birmingham for more than a season. Like, the White Sox has just never let that happen. I mean, he's hitting 300. This is a guy who's really, he's more about tools than baseball ability. And even now, and he's really holding his own. He leads the league in stolen bases. He's a freak. He's just not, like, a polished baseball player. But anyway, the point was not to talk about Tim Anderson being a major leaguer. The point was to say, White Sox just don't have enough, like, MLB-ready infielders to possibly do something as, you know, luxurious as decline an option on a declining shortstop. Because Alexi is, you know, he can actually field his position, which differentiates him from, you know, half the infielding crop they have, or Micah Johnson, stuff like that. And he's actually been known to be within, you know, arm's distance of league average at the plate sometimes, which is more than anyone else in that group has done. So I just don't think they can get rid of him. It's kind of like the situation with Gavin Floyd, the option a few years back. It's just like, even if you don't like him or don't think he's ideal, at this point that group is just not strong enough for you to just purge value because you don't like it. Like, you should at least trade Alexi Ramirez.
What's the option for again? 10 or 15 million?
I think it's 10.
Yeah, I mean, even if he's just a league average shortstop next year, that's a thin enough position that $10 million is worth it.
League average, huh? Is that what you want?
I'm saying even if he is, even if he's just league average, then for one more year.
Well, if he was league average, that'd be awesome, but he's well below league average.
If the White Sox had league average at like two or three more positions right now, they'd probably have near 60 wins.
That's true. That's true. But none of us expect Alexei to be as bad next year as he's been for most of this year, right? Otherwise, we wouldn't even be talking about them considering picking up that option.
Yeah, another year will do him some good. A little more age behind him.
I mean, I think to some degree he's just so streaky that I don't know how to map out his progression. He could completely fall apart. I don't expect he'll be sub-average defensively. I don't know where his bat's going. I don't really know what his plate approach is or how he gets hits. I don't know how he went from like a 20 home run guy when he started to someone who barely makes the ball go out past the infield for 3 months on end. He's a mystery, but they definitely shouldn't rely on Carlos Sanchez instead. Carlos Sanchez is like as encouraging as any other infielder in that crop right now. And Carlos Sanchez's OPS might still be under 600. Like a month of hot offense is as encouraging as anything any infielder has done in that group. And I would think I was part of the charge saying like White Sox have so many second base prospects. They should just put that position up to grabs at the start of the year. And they've completely broken me in like 4 months, which is impressive.
Are we going to see Micah in September? Do you think? Probably.
I mean, why not?
Yeah.
He stays healthy. I don't see any reason he wouldn't be up.
You know, he can begin his career as being Irving Gore ahead of time.
Sanchez's OPS, by the way, is up to 592, in case you're wondering.
Yeah, from being like 25% above average for all of July.
Yeah.
He was killing the ball. But he was so awful before. Those home runs are not cheapies.
No.
And he's listed at 5'11" on Baseball Reference.
Yep.
That is the boldest lie. He's like Tom Cruise out there.
His Baseball Reference wins above replacement is not in negative anymore.
Yeah, they probably changed the calculus on there.
0.2.
So the other kind of like weird prospect-y dude who's in the lineup is Avisail Garcia, who has homered the last 2 days, and I still kind of find myself talking about how much he's garbage.
Yeah, there's fortunate timing on the whole, like, hey, I changed some things, and then him getting a couple of pitches that he was able to drive. But
yeah, I'm glad everyone decided to throw him hanging breaking balls this week.
It's also, yeah, it's the second day of, we got a two-day sample going on here. I mean, he did walk. There's that. He walked, you know, multiple times, which is also impressive. For him.
Yeah, it is. I mean, with that kind of power, you gotta respect it.
I'd want to see a whole lot more than what we've seen before I'm like, oh, he's really turned it around.
I mean, it's good for him to have success. It's good to see him do good things. It's amazing to look at his batting line and see that just like a couple home runs, he's near league average. He's 24. Scott Merkin was saying he's never played a full season before, and that, I guess, is something to consider. You know, maybe we can't write him off. He's a huge toolsy dude who's always going to take time, maybe like Tim Anderson. So maybe him floating around league average is encouraging. But those two home runs were exactly the kind of home runs he was already running into with his current approach. They're like big loopy hangers that you could catch up to, and he kind of just reached across, and he's so freaking strong that ball goes out for him. Hopefully he'll just get some position towards left field in general, but I don't know. He hit a home run off Danny Salazar last year. It was like a 95-mile-an-hour fastball, and that's probably still the greatest thing he's ever done.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I feel like Avi bashing has become pretty much the norm lately, and I'm not saying that it's not without reason. He's been very terrible for the majority of this year. But regardless of what we all think, I'll be shocked if they give up on him. You know, he's gonna enter 2016 as a starting right fielder. he's, because of what you said, because of how young he is and because of the whole toolsy thing, they're going to give him at least one more year to try and figure this out.
They should not stop playing him for the rest of the year, but say you want to win with this team in 2016. Is that accurate?
Yes.
You need to add offense, right?
Yes.
Where is the easiest place to add offense?
Right field.
Or pushing Adam LaRoche down a laundry chute and getting another DH. Or right field. Corner outfielder is like where you add, and you got Eaton and Melky Cabrera. I don't know. It's dangerous for Abascal in that idea. I mean,
no, yeah, no, I don't disagree at all.
So is Adam LaRoche done? Like, is he done? Is this it? Is this the swan song? Can he possibly go out next year and improve anything? Or is this like, you're old and this is what happens to old people?
I think he could have a better year. I think he could also have shinier numbers if he doesn't have to hit left-handers. And I really thought not having a righty bench bat would be a minor issue, but if it's as far as like making Adam LaRoche look really terrible, it's not. He can't hit lefties, and they know that coming in, and that's what's dragging on his stats.
And Robin really don't want to play Flowers and Soto at the same time.
Yeah, he really doesn't. He's got Dian waiting in the wings.
Oh, Christ. And we haven't even talked about Trace Thompson yet, who has had all of one major league professional at bat under his career.
Like, LaRoche's league average against right-handed pitching, it's really disappointing. You'd want better. You want him to be a big plus. But he doesn't look like go retire against right-handed pitching. His strikeout rate still exploded, and he's old as dirt, so that's not really encouraging.
But yeah, he already has more strikeouts this year than he did last year in 200 fewer at-bats. Or 200 fewer plate appearances.
And, you know, talking around league sources, I hear that that's actually bad when that happens. But what's really dragging down his line is he's had 80 plate appearances versus lefties, and he's slugging 213 against them, which is higher than his OBP, which is 212. Like, you can't leave him in against there unless you want it out.
He strikes out almost half of the time that he faces a lefty.
Right. So, I mean, it's something to consider next year. I mean, J.B. Shuck actually has reverse platoon splits. J.B. Shuck, designated hitter, is probably not, like, your best lineup, but then again, it's also a way you could take Abascal down out of the defense for a bit, but then again, you're talking about, like, we're talking about playing for next year, and playing for next year, you definitely don't want your fourth outfielder playing right field and slap hitting and basically subbing in for your DH. Since it's so easy to find some random quad A guy, like, I don't know, Dian Vicieto, to hit left-handed pitching. Preferably not Dian Vicieto, but...
You know, the White Sox calendar that I have, the August, is
Matt Dian Vicieto.
And it's a little worrisome because they did the same thing. Beckham was like April, and they went and got Beckham. It's like they're really working so hard to have this not be an outdated calendar, and it's kind of annoying me.
Who's September?
I didn't peek up front yet. I don't want to ruin the surprise.
Oh, man. It's probably going to be like... Shit, I don't know. George Gutierrez.
Who just...
Anyone who got released.
Yeah, he just caught on with somebody.
Oh, did he?
Yeah.
That'll be like his 11th organization or something crazy.
Good for George.
How bad does George Gutierrez have to be defensively?
I don't know. I read this morning that he's very bad.
Well, yeah, that's just like his reputation. But like, I'm trying to think of like what he'd be like in a game. I mean, the guy destroys AAA pitching. His league average, like his career line, is like perfectly league average in major league time. But no one's ever started him. Looking him up like 2 years ago, he played for like the Cleveland Indians. They called him up. The first game he played, he hit two home runs against the White Sox.
Against the White Sox, yeah.
And then they didn't play him for like three more weeks. Gave him like four more appearances, then released him.
It was Yan Gomes' paternity leave was that weekend against the White Sox. And then they were still doing the Santana-Gomes thing. So, you know, mostly Gomes and Santana playing around the diamond.
But, like, what are you doing where you hit two home runs and the next thing is like, we can't have this guy back in the game anytime soon. This is a mess. Like, is he so bad at handling pitchers that they're just, like, threatening their manager with a knife afterwards? Like,
yeah, maybe they hate him the same way the pitchers seem to love Tyler Flowers.
It's, like, inconceivable.
The second best framing catcher in baseball, Tyler Flowers.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how much of that is. I don't trust framing stats. I mean, I don't want to dismiss them. I definitely think they're part of the equation. I just don't know how much is like. I mean, it could be as much your pitchers as the reason you're stealing strikes as you.
I would put more stock into a pitcher's stated comfort level with a catcher and the performance that comes out of that than the actual act of framing.
But yeah. Then again, you know, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, I think that the framing statistics that have seemingly caught on big time in 2015, I think they're useful and they're interesting, but I just don't think we quite understand how much more valuable they make a catcher yet.
I still have concerns about, like, okay, so you have the stated skill of tricking the umpire. Like, the umpire is going to adjust to that, right? Like, this guy is really good at tricking me. I'm going to let him not trick me anymore. Or is that something he wants to have happen?
Yeah, do umps read Fangraphs too?
I mean, these stats are out there, and they're directly related to your job. I assume they have gotten made their way to, you know, umpire rooms and meetings.
Has there been, like, a secret umpire meeting with, like,
I mean, they don't have to be presentations. Secret. These guys have a freaking union. I mean, they're talking all the time. They have, this is, I don't see how it's evaded them.
Well, in their union hall, hundreds of miles below the Earth's surface, where they have their secret meeting, do they, like, you know, run over, like, how they're being tricked and how they improve their zone? Or do umpires just kind of roll out of bed every day and just kind of like, you know, screw it, let's call the game?
They just laugh at each other. They're like, oh, man, Laz, Flowers really has your number.
Dang, Angel. You see how you tossed that manager last night?
I don't think anyone talks to Angel.
They all hang out and go to Joe West concerts and drink beer and chat with each other.
This is really getting really hard to wrap my head around. So there have been a couple guys who are actually hitting the ball in the lineup. And
Brayu hits home runs now.
Yeah, I basically begged the White Sox to tell him, disable him. Not disable him. Recognize that he's disabled at the All-Star break, and he responded by hitting the crap out of the ball. One thoroughly bullshit home run, by the way, but
yeah, I was gonna say, like, he's, it's not like all of his home runs are, they're certainly indicative of his strength, but it's not like he's got a bunch of absolutely crushed balls out there, but it's just nice to see him clear the walls.
He's still gonna have, like, a high 20s home run total, I feel.
Yeah, I think before the year, his over-under was like 32.5, and I think a few of us picked under, so he's going to end up not too far off from where we expected him. It's just weird because they haven't all come. Last year, there were just periods of time where he would just hit a bunch in a row during the first half of the season, and he hasn't had any huge streaks like that. He might be having one right now, but there hasn't just been one, like, holy crap, Jose Abreu's on fire streak this year.
There haven't been as many, like, bombs or, like, would that ball have ever stopped if it didn't hit something.
Yeah.
I forgot about that preseason thing, and considering all the optimism we had before the season, I don't even want to look at it.
Oh, I looked back. I was going to do a post at the All-Star break, and I started putting it together and showing how wrong we were about everything, and then I stopped because maybe I'll do it after the season.
Yeah, definitely should.
I don't think my depression with the numbers was actually why I stopped. I think I got distracted or busy, but then I was like, screw it, I'll just do it after the season.
Abreu was hitting like 500 in spring, so I'm sure we all like stayed super rational in our expectations for him.
I don't think any of us, yeah, pretty much every offensive over-under thing that I gave us, we all picked the over on. So, if you want to imagine how that went.
Do we think Carlos Sanchez is any good?
I am not buying at all. I know that he's eventually hit at multiple levels in the minor leagues, and he's still very young, but even with what he's doing now, I still feel like it's just something that's occurring right now, and we're not going to get this going forward.
If he can be like a 700 OPS, he's probably better than any other infielders. Like, Micah Johnson was not... I'm pretty sure he was driving Alexi Ramirez insane.
Yeah, he had to range a lot more than he wanted to on a regular basis.
The couple times I saw, like, Alexi, like, dive into second base territory after routine grounders, I kind of figured that Michael Johnson had poisoned his brain to some degree. Like, he was just traumatized. So I'm not that interested in Micah. I don't know where he plays defensively. Like, he can't play left field because he doesn't have the power to hold that up. And if he can't play in the infield, the Future Sox guys have some hope for him, and they ranked him decently in their midseason update, but...
Did you say the Future Sox guys? Because it really
future
sounds
Future Sox
like...
guys! I would not call them the Future Sox. Well, I guess that'd be fair for the prospects, but...
Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, I don't know how much... I mean, I guess you learn how to get good reads off the bat to set up better, but I think a lot of that first step stuff in the range... I mean, it's really more of his hands, and I guess, I don't know, how teachable is that? His hands are really bad. Like, he just... It's like he's carrying bricks.
You can give him new hands. I mean, how much longer is the Boniface still on contract? You could, like, you know, lop his hands off and give him the Micah Johnson. Paying him $4 million.
Yeah, is there an added bonus in that? Like, the hand
yeah, whatever he wants, really, as long as he doesn't sue.
Just have someone mess with the contract, add in some dummy language, and we can also give your hands to another player.
Sox do have a team option on Bonifacio for next year, and considering their usage of him this year, I'd be absolutely shocked to see that exercised.
Yeah. For what, like $4 million or something?
It's $4 million with a $1 million buyout, so.
This dovetails in my long-term plan for Avi to use him as an extra body for Jose Abreu when he ruins this one. Then transfer his essence into Avi.
We're going to need to get a dev team up together on this because it seems a little complicated.
All right. I brought up the over-under article in case you guys were curious.
Do it.
Jose Abreu over-under 33.5 home runs. We had everyone but me picked over. What's Jose Abreu OPSing right now?
850-ish.
Okay.
856.
I set the over-under on his OPS at 950.
That's high.
I don't know why I did that, but everyone picked the over except Nick on that one.
I picked the over?
Yeah, and your reasoning was just irrational confidence with a question mark.
What did I say that I was choosing a four-digit OPS for him?
You said, but probably not by a lot.
Okay. I kept it under the four digits, at least.
How many stolen bases Adam Eaton got?
Not many.
What's he got, three? Jeez.
No, he's got more than that, right?
Four?
Like nine?
Can we go with net steals?
Well, I set the over-under on stolen bases at 19.5. All of us picked the over.
What?
Good grief. What are you thinking about?
I think the worst explanation was Ethan, who said... The Vince Coleman hype seems real, and Eaton is too fast and too smart a ball player to be as poor a base dealer as he was last year. I say somewhere in the mid-20s.
He has 11. I mean, it's not...
Oh, yeah, see, he'll get close.
It's not impossible. He's going to have to go ham a bit, but...
And Matt said he was putting more belief in his staying healthy than his actual swiping ability. All right, this is my favorite one. I already looked up where we're at right now. Gordon Beckham, over under 200 plate appearances. He is currently at 192.
Yeah, but he might not ever play again.
No, I know. So we're going to be really close to hitting that 200 mark. Everyone bet, James, Nick, and Ethan picked the over on that, and me and Matt picked the under. We were the optimists. The next one was Connor Gillespie, 100 over under 100 at bats against left-handed pitchers.
Well, he died definitely pretty quickly.
Yeah.
They were really disciplined about using him, and he still fell on his face.
Me and James picked the over on that. There's no reason at all for him to be over. He will be over, said James Vegan. Tyler Flowers, 300 on base percentage.
He has 10 plate appearances against lefties all year.
Tyler Flowers, 300 on base percentage. We had overs from me and Matt.
What the hell?
In Tyler Flowers' breakout year, he bats 260 and OBPs at 310, and we're all happy, says Matt.
Yeah, it's in 2019.
And then
the Orioles.
Avisail Garcia, my over-under. Man, I was so optimistic with these over-unders. Avisail Garcia, over-under 735 OPS. And me and James picked under.
Yes!
Gets too comfortable slapping singles to right field to produce power slash ever not swing, said James.
Oh, too close to home.
Nailed it!
Too close to home.
Oh, good.
Matt said that seems a likely target, but let's say the over because optimism. Ethan says, this is a difficult line. I think a 320 OBP and 450 slugging is possible, but I also fear the downside. What else? Well, Nick was over, but not by much. I know that Avisail has often been presented as a boom or bust prospect, but I've been increasingly thinking he's just an average player who hangs out with an OPS in the mid to high 700s for a while playing okay defense in the corner. anything else interesting in here? How many saves does Robertson have? 20-something? Yeah, we had said over under. Oh, Carlos Rodon, 49.5 innings pitched in the majors. Everyone picked the over except me because I'm dumb. Chris Sale over under 2.5 ERA.
Oops.
James and Ethan said over. Everyone else said under.
I want to trade Zach Duke, but who the hell is going to eat 2 years of Zach Duke in addition to this one? So I give up.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I don't like his profile at all. He's nothing special. He doesn't really help with lefties that much. He can't hit 90. He irritates me.
Maybe a contender will have a significant bullpen piece suffer a big injury. And
you mean like the Mets having Jerry Blevins fall off a freaking curve?
Yeah. He
falls off a curve. What kind of curve are we talking here?
There's no way that story is true. Like, it's one thing to, like, slip or trip, you know, while you're on the curb or whatever, but to actually fall down and to fall down hard enough that you break your damn arm.
You could just say you fell. Like, a curb is like a 2-inch incline. Like, you just fell. You don't have to have a curb there to illustrate some severity level.
Yeah.
He had already broken his arm this year.
Yeah, it was the second time he's broken his arm.
It's a reoccurring injury, that damn curb.
Was Blevins a lefty, too, or no?
Yes.
Yeah, that's perfect Zach Duke fit. There you go.
Mets. Mets all of the Mets. Here, eat these $8 million, Mets. It's basically a pittance as far as Major League Baseball teams go. That's what you think. Yeah, we need a non-broke team to get on this.
Yeah, I don't know. I can't think of any fits that come to mind off the top of my head.
Maybe someone wants Gordon Beckham again.
I mean, the frickin' Yankees were trying to trade for Craig Kimbrell for some reason, even though they already have an amazing bullpen.
I mean, he wouldn't not help. They also traded for Dustin Ackley, and then he immediately went on the DL, so maybe they're interested in another burnt-out infield prospect.
Yeah, that's got Beckham written all over it.
Beckham and Duke for whoever.
Beckham Duke 2016.
So is that on the Republican debate tonight?
That's Indiana talking right there.
I mean, do they try to trade any of the other bullpen guys? Like, Petrichka or Albers or Putnam.
I don't know if anyone's really going to be that interested in Albers. I mean, yeah. He doesn't do anything very remarkable. He just kind of eats innings. And he hasn't been... He's only just coming back from breaking his finger in the frickin' Royals brawl.
It's kind of... I don't know if teams have gotten smarter or if there's just a difference. I seem to remember most trade deadlines in the past, that's like been the number one commodity, unless there's like some super stud on the market, is that teams are always trading for more bullpen depth. But I haven't seen a lot of need out there.
I mean, I assume there's always need. There's always going to be injuries, and you're not necessarily – with bullpen depth, you're not trying to think of it in terms of like, oh, he's only going to give me so many starts. You're really just stacking an arm for super, super cheap. I mean, we're talking about getting, like, cash considerations in return.
Yeah, and the difference is, you know, the difference of bullpen guys is, like, very slight on any given day from your best bullpen guy to your worst. I mean, it's just about the consistency. With 2 months left in the season and offense being what it is, they're just not worth as much.
The White Sox did once get an actual body for injured Jesse Crane, who has yet to throw a professional inning since that trade.
That guy never really did it.
He was a body. He wasn't cash for the trade.
That's not true. He's thrown a professional inning, just not a major league inning.
I mean, like, I'm sure the Barons are very grateful for his service, but he didn't really change many things about the White Sox, you know, reality.
I know.
I can't even, like, make his name. It was, like, De La something.
I watched Jesse Crane pitch in the Arizona Rookie League.
How'd that go?
Sad?
He was actually pretty bad, but it wasn't all his fault. It's, like,
part of it was time's fault. And
defense, you know, doesn't really exist at the same level, particularly with the catchers. He had a lot of balls get right past this guy.
How's Micker looking?
Mr. Micker just missed, like, weeks with injury.
Is it Micker?
It's Micker, yeah.
Oh, that
sucks.
Yeah.
Has anyone talked to him about that?
I thought it was Micker, too, until I heard players talking to him and calling him Micker, and I was like, well, I guess they would know. So
maybe they wouldn't.
I can't wait until him and Montas are on the team together, and I'll call them Micker Zapata and Francellus Montas.
Was it Francellus or Francellus?
Francellus, whatever.
See, he didn't even have, like, his elaborate form of his name right.
I just want the unique names. Frankie's boring. Micker's boring.
Frankie's cool. How many guys named Frankie do you
know? How many Mikers do you know? What are you talking about?
I don't know, but it's close to Mike.
It rhymes with biker. And
also, Micker makes you think of Mickey Mantle. And that's who Micker Adolfo is the next.
You're going to have to dial it back here.
Is he a big drinker or something?
Anyway,
what's next on the agenda?
I don't remember.
I think trades is pretty much like...
Oh, well, the scouting team shake-up.
Yeah, did anyone read... the Future Sox piece? Apparently I've been just reading Future Sox a lot by myself in Elkhart, Indiana. But they interviewed Hostetler.
Oh, I missed that.
He said he did the entire draft except for Carson Fulmer this year. So you're expecting a big change in how they draft. Probably not.
Yeah, but wasn't there some quotes? I thought I saw some tweets about how he acknowledged them being more aggressive and getting high schoolers instead of just focusing on college arms or something like that.
He said like that was his specialty more so than who's or what's its face?
Doug Lauman.
But then again, like, he's kind of been Lauman's high school guy. And he tried to kind of walk back the statements a bit with Future Sox today, just saying, like, we're not going to be, like, crazy, just high school, but we're going to be best player available, and we're not going to eliminate that. And I think you've been seeing that kind of, like, slowly creep in now, is that they still haven't gotten to the point where you think they might draft a high school with, like, their first overall pick, but maybe that's the transition they'll move slowly towards. I mean, I see it a lot like Rick Hahn. They're not fundamentally – it's not going to be the vast overhaul of the White Sox way of things, just like Rick Hahn didn't, like, throw away everything that Kenny Williams did. But there might be, like, you know, a slightly more moving towards the tendencies of Hostetler. But then again, Hostetler's voice was not, like, non-existent before now.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, part of the thing, where they just promote from within, and then they never get rid of the original guy anyway, since he's now a senior advisor, so how much radical change can there be?
But you also wonder, like, I mean, only time will tell if he's actually just going to do some minor tweaking because what Lauman did was fine. It could all just be lip service, and then Hostetler gets in there and says, well, I'm going to do a whole bunch of shit differently because now I'm the one in actual in charge. You know, when you go to that, Kenny went to an actual role when they bumped him up for Han. I feel like when Lauman's going to just this advisory role, that's just basically them saying, yeah, we'll still give you some paychecks to hang around because we like you. Right?
And he's got to do something. I imagine he'll still have scouting contacts.
Yeah.
I mean, Kenny kind of said when they're... Paul Sullivan's had a column today about... Or not today, but earlier this week about... White Sox just hired Dave Dombrowski.
Yeah.
To be the president of baseball operations, and Kenny basically told Sullivan, like, that's basically what my job is. That's not what we call it, but... That would be so crazy, just jam Dombrowski in the middle of Han and Kenny Williams.
Well, hey, Kenny was almost going to go to Toronto last offseason, supposedly.
He was. I'm just imagining them all staying. Like, it would be great to have another crazy power struggle in the front office again.
Yeah, it would make for some fun times.
Also, Dombrowski walking around the hall and bumping the Hawk would be... Someone, like, would need to put a camera on that situation.
Seriously, the article, I think it was John Greenberg or someone tweeted a link to the Tribune article from when Dombrowski was fired by Hawk back in the 80s. And it was so funny how, like, PC they were trying to be, but it was just basically like, yeah, Dombrowski had all these philosophies about prospects, and Hawk just didn't want to hear any of it. So he decided to fire him.
And time proved that Dombrowski's goofy philosophies were great.
You know, he drafted Justin Verlander and traded for Miguel Cabrera and did a bunch of other stuff. He's done an all right job in his career since the White Sox let him go.
Taking crazy gambles on young pitchers like Max Scherzer and nonsense. He's kind of a destructive force in franchise history.
Hawk really kind of ruined things.
Yeah.
I mean, really badly.
No, that's not even a joke. Like, his GM tenure was just a freaking disaster.
No, it was like somebody just came in real quick and bulldozed the entire organization real quick and was like, start the fuck over.
How has somebody not written a book just about Hawk's GM tenure? Just specifically about that. I figure there are so many stories from people who worked for him.
It's like one of those episodes of Looney Tunes where they put Taz in, like, in charge of something for, like, 5 minutes. Except it was 6 months.
Is that all he was there for, 6 months?
I mean, I don't know. He quit, like, in August. I assume he was GM for a couple months ahead of time.
Oh, I thought it was, like, a year or two.
No, he didn't last one season.
Only enough time for Carlton Fisk to be playing left field, like, a handful of games, wondering what the hell's going on.
He only lasted long enough to fire Dave Dombrowski and Tony La Russa.
Yeah. He was productive.
And traded away Bobby Bonilla.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I always forget about that.
Real bad. He was the announcer before that. Then they hired him.
I mean, that was not long after Jerry took over the team, right? Like
it was like 5 or 6 years after he took over the team.
Was it that long? Okay. I mean, I guess we saw Jerry's, like, super loyalty to guys who are, I don't know, guys who are very loyal to the organization. Jerry's very loyal to him. We've been seeing that for years, and it was obviously very true back in the 80s, too.
Yeah, the idea that's been reined in is kind of terrifying. Like, this is a less intense version of what it used to be.
Yeah. That's why the hitting coach right now isn't...
Well, Harold Baines an assistant hitting coach?
He is the assistant hitting coach, yeah. That's reined in.
Yeah, he was hanging out with the iguana the other day. doing normal hitting coach stuff.
Bobby Big Pen's the bullpen coach, right?
Yeah. So, probably going to get the crap kicked out of them by the Royals this weekend.
What are you talking about? They got the ace on them on Friday.
John Danks?
Yeah.
That sample size of, like, dominating the Royals, 121 innings.
Yeah, he's legitimately been good against the Royals this career.
It didn't slow down after surgery.
We've talked about it before. I mean, he's a guy that gives up a lot of home runs, and they're a team that plays in a large park and doesn't hit home runs, and so it makes some sense.
I've been following a lot of Royals writers. It's funny to, like, pick up on, like, the palpable dread of John Danks they have, like, almost on Bruce Chen levels for us.
Do they really? That's so good. That's satisfying as hell for some reason.
Like, Andy McCullough was, like, the Casey Star beat writer was talking about, like, some playoff, like, scenario where the Royals lose. It's like some team acquires, like, John Danks at the waiver deadline and has him pitch game 7 of the ALCS and eliminates the Royals.
Oh, he had a tweet. The one tweet of his that I saw was where they were in the midst of some big winning streak. And someone tweeted him and said, "Will the Royals lose again this season?" And his response was, "It depends on if they face John Danks again or not."
He owns them. To clone other pitchers and ruin their shoulders and throw out a wave of them at the Royals.
Yes.
Well, I'm out of stuff.
Yeah, we're at about an hour, aren't we?
Yeah. With the Dink stuff, we actually finished on a positive note. So that's a new thing for this podcast.
Yeah, I mean...
What, Dink stuff being positive or us finishing on a positive note?
Both.
Yeah.
Both.
All right.
Now we can get to those hot debates.
Yeah, let me plug right in.